Hello, I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gallen.
And we welcome you to our show today, which is
Love Letters Live. And this is a show about gratitude, and this is a show about love letters, and this is a show about sharing what you feel with somebody. It's not a love letter, I don't think, until it's stamped and mailed. It can be a lot of beautiful things, but it's not really a letter till it gets sent out there. And we like to say what you feel while you still have the chance. Mm-hmm. And that means while you're still here on this earth. You know, you don't want to get to a stage where you have forgotten things or you don't have the strength to write it down. Do it while you can.
Right. Sometimes when people hear the name of our show, Love Letters Live, they think this is about romance. And it can be. The love letters can certainly be about romance.
Yes.
But a love letter can be to absolutely anyone at all.
For any reason, at any time. And the sooner the better, I think.
Right.
And I want to say also that I have come to see that every love letter is a success story. Somebody's success story. Overcoming challenges and seeing what's to be gained and what's to be grateful for in the end. So I'm going to introduce our guest today, Herb Freudman, who is a Holocaust survivor, a father, a grandfather, a California businessman. And Herb, I'm just going to turn right to you. And I know that you had said to me that earlier that you are here because of, and I'm going to let you just take it from there, that you did not perish at Auschwitz as so many of your family did. Because why?
Well, my answer is because of a mitzvah. For those who don't know what a mitzvah is a good deed.
Okay.
And the mitzvah that enables me to be alive today, mm-hmm, is the fact that my grandparents wanted to collect money in America from Europe.
For charity, for
charity to take back to those who needed it.
Okay. So let me ask you something before we go any further. You're a grandfather. And so you're talking about your grandfather. And when was your grandfather born? This takes us back a ways.
I'm not sure I know when he was born. But when my grandparents came here, they stayed for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
They came by slow boat. There were no airplanes.
But this is in the 1800s.
Yes.
Yes, okay. I just wanted to say that.
And they went to Cincinnati, where there were a lot of Jews.
Mm-hmm.
And also to New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I know for sure that they went to Philadelphia because my father was born in Philadelphia and I have his birth certificate to prove it.
I see. Okay. So then he went back. They went back to Belgium.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And they went back and evidently they collected enough funds. They stayed here in the United States a total of 3 years.
Yes, and let's talk about when they went back, though.
Yes.
Because that was when Hitler was coming to power?
Well, when they went back, this was long before Hitler came to power.
Okay.
Yeah.
But life changed then because Hitler did come to power. So what became of your family and how did your life change?
Well, it changed tremendously because the German paratroopers landed the day that we left our home.
Uh-huh.
Now, my father was in the diamond business,
mm-hmm,
and that's another ingredient of why I'm alive today, because diamonds are very portable,
mm-hmm,
and it was also a cash business. The brokers would take cash. And then when they returned the diamonds, they would shake hands and say, "Mazlum brocha."
Okay, so nothing. So that's luck and blessing. So nothing was written on paper. There were no contracts. All things were done just by trust and a handshake.
That's right.
And your fellow man.
Right.
How nice.
And they came back. They stayed 3 years, and evidently they came back with enough money to decide to go home,
mm-hmm,
which they did. And in those days, you had to come every year in order to maintain your citizenship. So my father lost his citizenship.
Oh, he lost his United States citizenship?
Yes.
Oh.
Even though, mm-hmm, he was born, mm-hmm, here.
Wow.
However, I was born at the time when he still had it.
Oh.
And my sister, also, we were minors.
So technically you were born an American citizen because you were the child of a citizen.
That's right.
How lucky.
And my sister was also, and they got a permit to accompany minors to leave the United States.
How did you get out of Belgium?
We got out of Antwerp by taxi.
How did that work?
Well, the taxi...
I've never heard of that.
The taxi driver asked us where we wanted to go, and we said, to France. He says, I'm not going to France. I'll go anywhere in Belgium.
He wasn't allowed to cross a national line?
He didn't want to.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yes. And we didn't want to wait for another taxi because they were maybe not easy to come by. So this taxi driver said, I'll go to Belgium anywhere you want. So we said, well, take us to the border of France. And he took us to a little town called La Panne, which has, if you have one foot in Belgium and one in France, you are in La Panne.
So you got out of Belgium to France.
To France. And this has really, I don't know how much time I have.
Not much, so no. Unfortunately.
Okay, so I'm not going to belabor incidents that happened en route.
I wish we could, but yeah.
Yeah. So once in France, we took a train all the way down to Bordeaux. And in Bordeaux, an American ship, a U.S. luxury liner called the United States, that was the name of the ship, rounded up Americans to take them out of the war
Europe.
Zone.
Ah.
And we went from Bordeaux to Ireland, Galway Island, and picked up more people. People were sleeping on billiard tables. People were sleeping on the floor. The ship was completely overloaded. This was a luxury liner, but...
no luxury.
No luxury whatsoever. Mm-hmm. The luxury was to get to America and get out of the war
zone.
Not be killed.
Let me ask you something. You were a child. I mean, you were a young teenager. Were you frightened?
I was 15.
Uh-huh.
And I wasn't old enough to be frightened.
That's what I was wondering.
Paris fell while we were on the high seas.
My. Yes, because that escaping to France is really jumping on the Titanic, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
No help.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And when we arrived in Bordeaux, evidently the State Department, I don't know if we had passports or not, but they verified that we were for real and that we were Americans and so forth. And we never went to Ellis Island or any of those places. They took us right to New York.
So when you say that you have your grandparents to thank for this, the good deed that they did. Had they not gone to the United States to raise money for charities in Belgium to help people, then the citizenship never would have hit your family at all.
No,
so it was really this good thing they did.
And many of my relatives were wiped out.
Sure. It's just awful.
Now, we repaid this mitzvah.
Okay, say how?
With our own mitzvah.
Mm-hmm.
We went to Israel.
Now you're older and you're married. Met your wife
That's correct.
Yes.
And we returned the mitzvah by doing our mitzvah. We wanted to spend the high holidays in Israel, and it turned out that it was the Yom Kippur War was on.
Yes.
So we returned the mitzvah. We wanted to volunteer anything at all, and they said that we could not volunteer unless we're willing to stay for 6 months. And I had to make a living. I could not stay for 6 months.
Yeah.
So they said if you would rent a car at your own expense, we would appreciate if you would drive troops to the front.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we did.
So you volunteered your time and expense.
And that was our mitzvah because we worked night and day driving troops.
So you did kind of an equivalent good deed of helping people in a war zone, helping your people.
That's right.
But you said you had told me this, and I just want you to talk about it because this is something I don't think most people would be aware of. You said that while you were doing that, you saw a line of Palestinians who were doing what?
We saw a line of Palestinians as far as the eye could see.
Yes.
Volunteering to give blood to Jewish soldiers.
Okay. See, and you don't hear about this kind of brotherhood.
No.
In the news.
Not
ever.
Today. Not
well,
today.
I'm sure, and I know there are also instances of it today.
Probably.
But we just don't focus on the selfless or the good often enough.
That's person right. to person.
Yes. And your life has been one, it seems, of focusing on the positive
right.
that has befallen you.
Right. Now, we worked night and day, my wife and I,
mm-hmm.
in taking the troops where they wanted to go. For example, one group wanted to go to the Golan Heights,
mm-hmm.
so they assembled to a place, and there was a sign up that said Golan Heights in English and in Arabic
mm-hmm.
and in Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went to the Golan Heights, and once we dropped them off, we followed another group that wanted to go to the Negev. And
so you were on duty.
We were on duty. We worked very, very hard
God
throughout
bless.
That Yom Kippur war.
Good for you.
And that's a tremendous mitzvah that we did
okay.
on our part. So we're going from one mitzvah, which means good deed,
yes.
to another.
And repaying those is so important when we can do it. So
that's
I just
right.
want to, I think we need to take a little break for
sure.
I hate to do it, but we
Before we do
to.
That, though, for yes. for our listeners who are not familiar with the word mitzvah, what, how do you spell that?
Well, of course it's a Hebrew word.
Right.
But
if
you
English
write
spelling?
It in English, uh-huh. it would be M-I-T. Z V A H, mitzvah.
Okay, yes, and it's okay. a lovely word, and with a great.
It means it means good deed.
Good deed, which we all should be doing more of.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Just a reminder to our listeners that this is KUSF 90.3 FM. We're here every week at this time, and hope you will join us for the tremendous guests and lessons that we have.
Thank you. Okay, I want to go back to you, Herb, and ask you. Even though you've kind of indicated who gets your love letter today, and I can see that in a life of really combined horror and high points and positive things to be grateful for, as you so clearly are, who do you want to write to and what do you want to say?
I want to write to my grandparents
mm-hmm.
because thanks to them, my father was born here. And made me an American.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandparents, I have my father's birth certificate to prove it.
Mm-hmm.
And they are the ones who I have to write to thank them for getting me out of
yes harm's way.
Harm's way.
Now let me ask you something. I think in a letter, because a letter that you write is your own history,
yes.
documented by yourself, and you've got quite a history to tell, and I'm sure you have told this again and again. But if it, in a letter form, how would you address them? You would say, "Dear," let's make it a real letter.
Oh yes, okay.
So what?
Well, I would address. I called my grandfather
mm-hmm.
Bumpa.
Bumpa, okay, yeah. Dear Bumpa.
Dear Bumpa.
Uh huh. And your grandmother?
And Bumma.
Okay. Now, I think this is an important thing to say because here, may I ask how old you are?
Yes, I am 82.
Okay, so this is.
And I was 15.
Right.
At the time
yes.
when. We left Belgium.
Now, I usually don't ask because ordinarily it doesn't matter, but historically I think it means something. And here you are, and you're smiling as you say Bumpa and Bumma. So even, you know, at any age when you think of somebody you love, somebody in your past, it evokes the same affection.
Absolutely.
So I think even though you're writing to people who are no longer here, you're calling them that brings them back.
That's right.
Yes. So you want to thank them. What do you want to say about them personally that you remember, that you recall?
Well, of course, first may they rest in peace.
Mm-hmm.
They were wonderful people.
In what way?
In first wanting to do good,
mm-hmm.
which they did. And I also remember spending time with them.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very pleasant company.
In what way? See, I think it's so nice to say the specifics, because that's what really makes a history and a love letter.
Yes.
What about them was good company?
Well, my grandfather...
Mm-hmm.
We visited my grandfather every Shabbat.
Uh-huh.
After
every
synagogue.
Sabbath. Uh-huh.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And after everybody went home, he would sit down with me and teach me things that he felt I ought to know about Judaism.
Uh-huh.
And to this day, I remember in great detail that he taught me part of the Bible, of course, the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
We call it the Torah. Mm-hmm. And
was he a patient person?
Very
patient?
Very patient. And when I made a mistake, he wouldn't scream at me, mm-hmm. but he would gently rephrase the question so that my answer would be correct.
Oh, how nice.
Yeah.
Yes, built-in success.
Yes.
That's wonderful.
Yes. And
so don't you think these are kind of the nice things to tell them in a letter, that you remember more than that they
right.
saved your life, but what about their life that you knew?
Yes. Well, we are members of Culture Forum,
mm-hmm.
and whereby Darby knows that many things that I discuss in class and so forth,
mm-hmm.
I learned from my grandfather.
Okay, so you're still able to pass on the wisdom
from
your own grandfather.
From my own grandfather.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Let's mention that. Okay. And what else? What about your grandmother?
Now, do I have to mail this letter?
Ah, yes. Oh, isn't that such the perfect question? Yes, you do, because a letter not mailed, that's a nice essay and a beautiful expression of yourself, but mailing it makes it really a love letter. So that is something to talk about right now.
Okay.
What would you think? I would think you've got grandchildren.
Yes.
And if you we've done this with other people, and I like it a lot personally because I think it doubles the importance of what you're doing, is you write it to one person, but you send it to someone else. Now, how old are your grandchildren?
My grandson is 15, mm-hmm. and my granddaughter is 13.
And so they live near you, right?
Yes.
So they know you well?
Absolutely. When we first came here, their parents had us babysit all the time.
But now they're teenagers,
We diapered both of them.
Okay. So you could write this letter as completely as you can. And I'm going to give you the few notes I've taken, but I would hope when you get back home, you'll find yourself a nice, quiet place to sit and don't let anybody in the room, no interruptions, so you can really travel back in your own thoughts and write down absolutely everything you remember about your grandparents, about their life, about time with them, just that part. The letter to them about them and the strength that they gave you and how they made you feel, because I think part of a good love letter can be how you feel in the light of somebody else's strength and love and wisdom. And then when you've put all that down, then just look at your notes and write it into a letter as fully as you can, and then mail it, maybe a copy or maybe one to both your grandchildren since they're living at home. Because what a wonderful connection to their own past.
Yes, it certainly is.
And something about, you know, something of you that they'll have forever. And so when they're 82, they can take it out and be tied generations back to their own history in your handwriting. What do you think?
I think it's a very good idea. And coming back to Rabbi Darby, ever so often, we go to this Lunch and Learn class every Thursday, and I bring up certain things that my grandfather taught me, and he said, boy, your grandfather did a terrific job.
Well, then you want to say that in the letter. You want to say that where I go now, the synagogue I attend now, even now, in 2007, what you taught is...
I discuss quite often.
Yes. Is it impressive to the others?
Right.
It's just never goes out of time or style.
Right. And he taught me the Hebrew language.
Yes. And what a wonderful thing for your grandchildren to know.
Right. Well, this is so fascinating on so many levels, and it goes along with something. I brought something in that one of our listeners, who is an investment manager, financial planner, gave to me an article from the Financial Advisor magazine.
Oh, what is it?
And this, the title of the article is Preserving Clients' Life Stories.
Oh.
And we know that financial planners, investment managers are very interested in protecting people's assets, their financial assets, so that they can pass them on to other generations. But this article says also, Americans want their stories, their feelings, and their triumphs, their wisdom, the events that became watersheds in their lives to live on, as well as their assets. That's because people are storytellers. And it goes on to say that many of us are continually writing our life stories, most of us in our heads, and sometimes just as fantasy. So we like this story. But some researchers say that our stories are far more important than fantasies. In fact, I love this line. In fact, the way we each tell our story can influence what kind of life we will have, our future success, and even our happiness. So... the stories that we tell ourselves that we've learned, I think, Herb, would you agree with that?
Yes.
Has very much affected the kind of life that you have lived and are living.
Absolutely.
Oh, and especially when you tell the strength and the positive and you let yourself bathe in that, it is really it's a healing, encouraging kind of thing, and it lets that side of you come out, I believe.
Yes.
Yes. And you certainly do that. You certainly are focusing in your whole life's history. You keep focusing on the positive, the positive things that saw you through.
Yes,
and you still look at life like that. I can see it.
Well, I keep using the word mitzvah.
Yes.
Because one mitzvah led to the other.
Yes, one good deed. That's right. It's just a contagion of goodness comes from that, I think.
Right.
Okay.
So this article,
I'm sorry.
Certainly, No. It makes many points. And then one that, Janet, I think you'll want to elaborate on. And this quotes another financial planner who is a very wise woman, who, in the same vein of keeping your, as well as your taking care of your financial assets, take care of your family stories, she urges her friends, who are now in their 30s, to write a letter to each child on his birthday. And save them, make copies of them, presumably, until the child is 21. She says, for my own children, I kept journals from the time they were born, matched them with photographs, and compiled a sort of This Is Your Life album that I gave to each of them when they were teenagers.
I think that's wonderful. I want to say one little additional thing, and you knew I'd have something to say.
Of course, that's why I brought it up. You always do,
but,
and they're always wonderful things.
There's something wonderful about a journal, for sure, that you present to somebody. I think, personally, and maybe it's because I'm kind of a gossip, I don't know, but I think there's something even more wonderful about a letter unopened. It's a hidden treasure. And we did this with one of our guests, if you remember, with Anna Berger. And to write letters to those children... seal them, put some kind of a jazzy stamp on and make the envelope really a gift wrapping and mail it. You can mail it to yourself. You can mail, you can say your child's name, care of yourself. And then when that child is, what did you say, 21, say, gee, look what you have here. You have 21 letters. And for somebody to have, there is such a, just a thunderous jolt on finding letters. It's unopened. Nobody has been able to see it. It's not like a journal that a whole bunch of people might have. It's private. It's for you only. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it has never been opened and it's sealed just, I think, makes it so much more intensely a find. just defined.
So is it like a time capsule?
Yeah, okay, you could say that. You could say that. Just an accumulation of letters that are yours. Look what I found. Look what I have for you. And let that person open those letters one at a time. Let them look at the postmark and see when it was sent. My gosh, I got this when I was a year old. It's been waiting for me.
Uh-huh.
See what it is.
Yes.
You know, it's the egg hunt.
Mm-hmm.
It's the finding treasure, hidden treasures, I think.
Right.
So I think that's a wonderful thing to do, to write every year to children.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd stamp it and mail it.
At the time.
Yes.
And then keep,
yes.
keep copies in
yes.
case they get the children throw things away?
Well, you can mail it to yourself and
you
keep it in the box.
I
mean, care of yourself. Or
okay.
you can mail it to the child's parents if you can enlist the honest word of that parent not to open it.
Uh-huh.
It needs to be kept.
And certainly grandparents can do this, too, with their grandchildren.
Yes. Right. To write often to your grandchildren at this stage of your life, start writing regularly would be wonderful. Well, thank you for coming today.
Thank you for having me. I intend to do that.
Good.
Yes.
And you can make copies of everything you write so that you'll have a backup.
Right.
And you'll be able to look in years to come at what you wrote at the time and see what you were saying. That's kind of a treat, too.
Right.
Jenna, I noticed that as Herb was talking, you were taking notes.
Mm-hmm.
So can you tell us about the kinds of notes that you take when you do this for other people, but when
yes.
you're writing a letter, your own love letter to someone?
I do it for me.
You do it for yourself as well?
I just start thinking. I start somewhere. And sometimes sometimes there's something that triggers memories, like a scent, a perfume, a color, a someplace that I had been as a child, and it just triggers something, so I just start writing notes of everything I remember about the person I want to write to.
Mm-hmm.
And I can let it sit for a couple of days, and I can add to it, and then I take it and I do a final.
Right.
But the wonderful thing about a love letter is it's a combination of feeling and planning.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like a telephone message mm-hmm. dropped off on some machine where mm-hmm. you blurt something out, and then you would just, you give the kingdom to take it back. Or to fine-tune it, or to make it more accurate.
And so, I consider a love letter to be a gift to my... When I write a letter, it's a gift to myself as well. I just wrote one to a dear friend. We've been friends for 50 years. And it was just a treat to take time out and think back to those school days. And what did I remember about her? I can't really ever remember a time that we weren't friends. And... It was just such a pleasure, and then I did what you suggested. I just wrote a bunch of things down. I could have made the letter 20 pages long easily, but I wanted to keep it short. So then I had to go back and say, well, this isn't as important. I have to say this. This
Good
will
point.
Trigger a memory in her.
Mm-hmm.
I knew you when you wore glasses, for example,
mm-hmm.
rather than I've known you for 50 years.
Yes, yes.
And of course, uh-huh. she got contact lenses when she was in high school. So that kind of, and we wore our first high heels together and that kind of
yes,
thing.
Yes, the things that would really take people back in time to their younger selves,
right.
which is what it does. And also... saying this, you know, you can write more than one letter if what
yes.
you've written is so voluminous that you can't write a 20-page letter, because they're hard to read.
Right.
You can do 10 shorter letters over time.
Right.
Or just fine-tune what you want to say.
Herb, I saw the expression on your face. It looked like you had something you wanted to add to that.
Well, I don't know how much time I have.
You have a couple of minutes.
Well, I wanted to say something very important. The German paratroopers, like all paratroopers, don't know where they're going to land. So we had in Belgium, like you have, drink Coca-Cola everywhere here.
Like a billboard?
We had signs
mm-hmm.
That said Pasha Chicory, because the coffee they drank there had chicory. And the Pasha Chicory signs on the back of them had instructions for paratroopers where to meet.
The Nazi would, paratroopers.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So they said they would say, go north a quarter of a mile, and there you will meet 2nd Division so-and-so. So the paratroopers would be oriented. Well, we knew that, of course, because we had seen it. So then it became our job to remove those signs.
Sure.
So whoever could get to the signs first took them down. But that shows the fifth column at work.
Yes.
That they planned this long in advance to have those signs in Belgium
Yes, so you could, that's right, they started to work on the destruction long before you saw the first signs of it.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you for telling us that. I think that's something people don't know,
that,
most people.
I certainly didn't know that. Yeah. Well, we are out of time now, and we want to remind our listeners to tune in, please, this time every week to hear these wonderful stories. We hope that you will send us your letters and questions, and if you have something to say to a guest, we will pass that along. Please go to www.loveletterslive.com, where you can also catch our past programs.
Right. And if you think you have to wait for a special occasion to write a love letter, please remember that writing a love letter is a special occasion and can be a really historically important one for your family as well.
Right.
Thank you.
So until next week, at this time, this is Teresa
and Janet
saying bye-bye for now.
Bye.